Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. We've done several shows about San Quentin, which is one of the more forward-looking prisons in our country's massive system. But there's another more troubled institution in the region. FCI Dublin is one of six women-only federal prisons, and over the last few years, incarcerated people there have brought terrible allegations to light about a culture of sexual abuse of inmates by the prison guards. One previous warden and a chaplain have already gotten lengthy sentences, and just last week, the FBI raided the place again, seizing evidence for their ongoing investigation. Now a judge has ordered that a special master be placed in charge of what she called a dysfunctional mess. We'll talk with reporters and advocates for people on the inside. That's coming up next, right after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Before we go any further, we want to note that this is some very difficult stuff. It's important, but it could be hard to hear, and it may not be appropriate for the young people around you. No one expects a U.S. prison to be a nice place. Our system focuses on punishment, and violence is rampant. But there are levels to the prison system, and the Federal Correctional Institute Dublin had a nickname among people incarcerated there, Rape Club. The women-only prison was notorious for a sexualized atmosphere that was so bad that eight prison staffers have now been convicted of crimes, including the former warden. Big changes are coming to the facility because of a court order, and we're joined by some of the people who are responsible for bringing some sense of reform to the institution. We begin with Mike Balsamo, U.S. law enforcement news editor with the Associated Press. Welcome.
Good morning, Alexis. Thanks so much for having me.
Michael, can you talk to us about your 2021 investigation, which really brought together the kind of systematic overview of what was really happening in this place?
Absolutely, yeah. My colleague Mike Sisak and I have been investigating the Federal Bureau of Prisons since 2019, since Jeffrey Epstein took his own life in custody of the Bureau of Prisons. You know, as we continue to dig further into sort of what happened there, we learn that this was what happened in the Epstein case was not, you know, soloed to New York. And so we began to hear from people incarcerated in prisons across the country about systemic issues in the federal prison system, a system that holds more than 150,000 people in its care. And we began to hear more and more of these stories about what was happening at FCI Dublin, women's prison in the Bay Area. And the stories were extraordinary. The incarcerated people there and staff members told us that for years they had been reporting sexual abuse and that all of those complaints had basically fallen on deaf ears. And so we continued to collect that reporting, talking to incarcerated folks, advocates, lawyers, folks who work there, to put together, you know, a pretty detailed investigation that laid out all of these accusations against staff members there, which had led to the arrest of several people, including the warden at that facility at the time, Ray Garcia.
So what was the nature of the allegations that was coming in?
So there were a multitude of different allegations made by folks incarcerated at FCI Dublin. They ranged from women who said that they had been taken off to duty assignments to prison jobs where they were sexually assaulted by staff members, to the former warden, Ray Garcia, who I mentioned, who was accused of forcing inmates in his care to strip naked in their cells and then taking pictures and storing them on his government-issued cell phone, to allegations of retaliation against incarcerated people and staff members who had reported this abuse.
I mean, I think it's also important for us to say that no sexual relationship between a staff person and an inmate can be legal. It's an illegal by default situation, just so folks know, no matter what they've seen on television. How different is the situation at FCI Dublin from other places that you've investigated? Like, obviously, terrible things happen in prison in a lot of different ways, but how is Dublin different?
Absolutely, yeah. I would say that what we've seen at FCI Dublin is extraordinary at another level of anything that we've seen across the federal prison system. There are certainly a lot of similarities in accusations that are made. The Bureau of Prisons has a staffing problem. It has a violence problem. It has a problem with staff members who are, you know, accused of crimes. It has a problem with not following up on accusations that are made. And we've detailed all of those in various investigations that we've done. But, you know, I think you can take it from the words of folks who have been brought in to try to make some of these reforms. After Ray Garcia was removed as the warden, the Bureau of Prisons installed a second warden, Tahisha Jacino, who told us, in an interview, that the BOP had lost its ability to manage with integrity, and it was one of the, worst places that she had seen. Then we saw in a court filing just the other day, the associate warden, who was also removed after the FBI search, describing Dublin as the worst institution I've come across. So even for folks who are working there and are in charge of making these reforms, they're really seeing it as extraordinary.
And is that just because there was like a corrupt culture, like a culture that had just gone spun out of control? So even when the warden was taken out, the people that were part of that institution and staffers still maintained this culture of criminality and sexualized abuse.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we saw that a number of times. Right. And it really sort of played out immediately after Ray Garcia was removed and the Bureau of Prisons moved in the then deputy regional director, Thomas Ray Hinkle, whose job it was to, come in and make sort of immediate reforms. And what we saw was that, he had blocked oversight by members of Congress. He, got into a verbal altercation with then Representative Jackie Speier, telling her that she couldn't come into the prison. He threatens staff members who had reported allegations of abuse. He told staff members during some of those visits that the Bureau of Prisons would close the prison if they continued to report their accusations either internally through the Department of Justice, speaking to reporters like us or going to members of Congress. And then the Bureau, the Justice Department, spun up a task force. They sent senior leaders. We saw the director of the Federal Bureau of Prisons resign after our reporting, but it took the Justice Department months before they could find a replacement. And so Michael Carvajal was left in that position, for almost 6 months after he resigned, and he was the person that they sent to Dublin, right, to hear these allegations directly from incarcerated folks. And when he got into a room with them, he said, you wanted me here and here I am, right? And so the tone was really sort of stark and standoffish in that approach.
Wow. Why were the complaints falling on deaf ears? Like, one imagines that because there is a known and predictable power imbalance between inmates and the staff in a place like this, there should be a process that allows people to make complaints about people who have all this control over their lives, right? Like, other prisons must have ways of dealing with this that are better than this.
Absolutely. But what we saw at Dublin was that staff members who were in charge of some of those procedures were then themselves accused of, sexually assaulting women in their care. When Ray Garcia was the associate warden, his job was to implement programs around the Prison Rape Elimination Act. And as the PREA coordinator, he knew the places in the prison where there were no cameras, right? And so he, court papers lay out how he intentionally led these women into these specific areas or cornered them in their cells where there are not cameras, with what the government contends was the intention to, allay surveillance and carry out these acts. And so, in addition to, having the sort of like prison's PREA coordinator being someone who's part of this culture, you also have just a general system in which folks' complaints went to staff members were just totally ignored. And when they did go up the chain, they went to the associate warden or to the warden who themselves were, you know, accused of misconduct. The Bureau of Prisons did change that somewhat when they instituted a task force and a bunch of senior leaders came to FCI Dublin. They came there to hear specific complaints. The Office of the Inspector General set up a hotline. There were other staff members from BOP headquarters who were there to hear complaints in person. And so they've made some reforms on that, along those lines.
Michael Balsamo, U.S. law enforcement news editor with Associated Press. How does a place like FCI Dublin get this corrupt? Like, what is that? Do we have a sense of the path that this institution took to getting so bad?
Yeah, it started early in the 1990s when there were first allegations of sexual abuse at FCI Dublin. And a lot of this comes back to a culture within the broader Federal Bureau of Prisons. And I'll come back to the story of Thomas Ray Hinkle, who was the deputy regional director, then put in as the interim warden at Dublin. But you know, after that was supposed to supervise the new warden who was in place. We had investigated Mr. Hinkle after, you know, we heard all of these allegations at Dublin and these kind of extraordinary stories. And it turned out that years earlier, as a correctional officer, he was part of a group of correction officers when he worked at a federal prison in Colorado, known as the Cowboys, and they had been accused of beating several Black inmates while using racial slurs. And several other members of the Cowboys were sentenced and convicted in federal court. Mr. Hinkle was not charged with a crime, and he continued to ascend the ranks in the Bureau of Prisons. And he was a really stark example of, you know, what internally a lot of Bureau of Prison staff members refer to as mess up, move up. People who are accused of very serious misconduct, which is often swept under the rug. And even when it's not, they're continued to be promoted throughout the system and raised in the ranks.
Last thing before we let you go, and really appreciate all the reporting you've done on this, Mike Balsamo. Bureau of Prisons declined our invitation to appear on this show. How cooperative were they for you in responding to, you know, what probably has been many inquiries over the years?
There have been many, many inquiries with the Bureau of Prisons and the Department of Justice. You know, I think we've gone back and forth. Like I said, we interviewed then the new warden. We've spoken to a number of Bureau of Prisons officials, and we've built a sort of source network among, you know, staff members and advocates and incarcerated folks. But I think to sort of really get at your question, I'll talk about when the task force was first initiated. The Bureau of Prisons did not tell us that there was a task force specifically designed to combat the abuse at Dublin, despite our reporting. We learned from sources that the then director, Michael Carvajal, was going to Dublin. We asked for him to appear in an interview with us. He declined. And so we told the Bureau of Prisons, well, we'll be in Dublin. We'll be, you know, outside the prison, and we'll be there and happy to hear from anybody. And that was the first time that we heard from the new warden, wow. Lucina.
Yeah. We're talking about the conditions at the scandal-plagued federal women's prison in Dublin. Been joined by Mike Balsamo, U.S. law enforcement news editor with the Associated Press. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Thanks so much for having me.
Stay tuned. For the rest of the hour, we're going to hear from formerly incarcerated people, reporters, and advocates on this Dublin women's prison. Stay tuned. I'm Alexis Madrigal.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about the conditions at the scandal-plagued federal women's prison in Dublin. We're joined now by Ashley Rolanda, who was incarcerated from June 2019 to September 2020 at FCI Dublin. Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Of course.
Ashley, I know this it's a difficult thing to talk about, but can you share what happened to you in Dublin?
Absolutely. I arrived at Dublin, as you mentioned. I arrived at Dublin in June of 2019. I was sentenced to 54 months in prison. And prior to me getting to Dublin, I was actually transported. I had self-surrendered there in downtown detention center, Los Angeles, which Los Angeles deported me and transported me to Dublin. But in the midst of that, I had stopped through the transportation over at Pahrump in Pahrump, Nevada, which is Nevada's Southern Detention Center. Unbeknownst to me is when I got there, I saw a lot of the same thing that was going on at Dublin. Women being abused sexually, women being abused, taken advantage of as well when it come to medical. So in my transition, when I was sexually assaulted there, I actually stood up and I reported everything and I did everything in my willpower from everything that Michael mentioned, a protocol, calling PREA, calling the officers, calling Pahrump Nevada Police Department, calling out, reaching out to friends, letting family members know how I was being assaulted. In the midst of that, it was investigated, and it was investigated. The sergeant was found guilty of all charges and all allegations. I was then reported and arrived at Dublin. I arrived at Dublin the mid, sort of the end of June. Upon arriving there, one of the sergeants, as well as John Bellhouse, along with Ray Garcia, I worked directly with.
So Ray Garcia, former warden, Bellhouse, I believe, was the chaplain, right?
Yeah, he was acting warden when Ray Garcia was not in.
Oh, okay.
But his actual title is safety administrator.
Oh, okay. Different person. Yeah.
So I worked for the warehouse when I arrived at Dublin. And shortly after working, maybe about an hour, Mr. Bellhouse had chased me down. And he figured with the amount of time that I had, that it was best that I worked in human resources. In the human resources at the camp at FCI Dublin, I actually was sort of a porter. I cleaned and I worked with regular staff members. Mm-hmm. I worked with free will people that worked inside the prison. Mm-hmm. At that time, I interacted quite often with more so with Ray Garcia, who came to HR many times. And my job there was not only to clean HR, the human resources department, but my job was also to clean up the gym and also clean up the employees' ballroom. Mm-hmm. In those areas, as Michael mentioned, and all the people that are speaking of Dublin, there is many, many places where there is no cameras, where the abuse, the flirtation, the verbal abuse, and the sexual abuse, that's just where it takes place. There was no cameras, there was anything. I was actually a victim, not only once, but I was a victim of three times. And the issue with that is it's almost like it was a tough situation because I wasn't the only one involved in it. And it's sort of embarrassing when you have to call in and you're knowing your phone calls are being recorded and monitored. So you really can't speak on it with family members and friends because you know you're going to be retaliated against. So what I did, I took the bull by the horn. And I said, I'm going to do whatever necessary, no matter what the repercussion would be and no matter what retaliation would be. I was raised to speak up when something's not right. And it wasn't right. And I dealt with about 7 or 8 inmates at the time. I was sort of trying to spearhead them and to speak up. But no one wanted to be transferred out to prison or thrown in the shoe for 3 to 6 months. Because you're speaking up on what the officers, what the wardens, and what the sergeants are doing. And so, therefore, when I arrived, as soon as the warden and the staff members look up your file, they basically told me that do not bring any allegations over to FCI Dublin, that I will regret it, and I better keep my mouth shut. It didn't sit well with me, although I was scared, but what I did do is I wrote PREA, I wrote Washington, D.C., I wrote the DOJ, I wrote Rights Behind Bars.
And anybody who might be able to hear you, yeah. I want to, just for a couple people just who are less familiar with the terminology, PREA is Prison Rape Elimination Act, so it's supposed to be this reporting structure that allows people to get the word out about this kind of abuse. And the shoe, right, is solitary confinement, right? So people don't want to be put in solitary confinement, and they also don't want to be transferred out of the facility. Why wouldn't they want to be transferred out of the facility, even if there is abuse going on there?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because unfortunately, every prison just about have sexual abuse. There were already women that came from Georgia, came from Illinois. They were transferred to FCI Dublin because of the same exact situation. So they just lose you in the system.
Yeah.
So when I got to FCI Dublin, the chaplain Hightower was being walked off and arrested when I arrived at Dublin. And he's the chaplain. And he was walked off for sexually assault and sexual abuse.
What ended up happening with your reporting from Dublin? I mean, I know in the previous instance in Nevada, there was sort of some process of accountability, at least. What about in Dublin?
In Dublin, I will say this. I realized that all my mail was being intercepted. All my calls were being recorded. And the only other option I had for my voice to be heard is I decided to file. I had already filed a motion. There was a new law came out under the First CARES Act. It says if you have a medical condition that will cause you not to make it out of federal or state prison, file a motion with the prison. And if you don't get anywhere, go directly to the judge that sentenced you. I did the protocol with the prison. They called me in many times. They said that it's not going to work. They're not letting me out. I mean, they came against me every way that they could because they knew I filed a motion. So my last recourse was to decorate my envelopes, all my legal mail. So I put it in my legal mail. I decorated my envelopes to the court. I said, Judge Cronstadt, Federal Bureau of Prison have a responsibility. They are to keep us safe. They are to feed us and they are to clothe us. I said, and they have failed to protect my safety. I am serving my time for my crime, but I should not be serving time and being sexually assaulted, sexually abused and mishandled. And I put it in my motion and I wrote it all over my envelopes. My door got kicked in. My cell got kicked in three times. For what I was putting out, because that was the only way I can get the word out. And my motion was granted August of 2020.
Wow. Ashley Rolanda was incarcerated from June 2019 to September 2020, as she was saying, at FCI Dublin. She's been sharing her story with us. I want to add another voice into our conversation. Alex Hall is our enterprise and accountability reporter here at KQED and has been following kind of the latest of what's been happening with FCI Dublin. Welcome, Alex.
Hi.
So, Alex, U.S. District Court Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers on Friday ordered that a special master be appointed. That's like I think it's actually a technical term, to oversee this prison, right? Called it a dysfunctional mess and said the situation can no longer be tolerated and that the facility is in dire need of an immediate change. What is that special master going to do? Like, how is this all going to work? Because it seems like a pretty unusual situation.
Yeah, it's definitely unprecedented for the Bureau of Prisons. So the special master is going to be a neutral third party who can help the court oversee certain reforms at the prison. This was part of the plaintiff's motion for a preliminary injunction, where they had requested a bunch of changes that they said were necessary right this second. Basically, they have this class action lawsuit that's still being litigated, but they were asking for the judge to intercede and kind of grant their requests for certain measures to be taken. One of those was to appoint this special master who would oversee an audit by an outside agency of all policies at FCI Dublin regarding sexual abuse, changes in policies based on that audit, quarterly site visits, reports. The special master is a specific thing that's separate, different from a monitor, right? Like we've heard of like a federal monitor, like with the Oakland Police Department.
Right, right. That's what I was kind of thinking.
Yeah. So the way that attorneys have explained it to me is that it's different from a monitor in that, you know, with a monitor, you're that person is trying to ensure compliance with a negotiated settlement agreement after a case is finished. With a special master, the case is ongoing, and the person is assisting the court as reforms are made as the case continues on. Attorneys also said that the special master, in theory, would have more power than a monitor. They'd actually be able to investigate and issue recommendations to the court. Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers has taken a really hands-on approach with this case. She actually visited FCI Dublin last month, spoke with over 100 women incarcerated there, asked them questions, and really saw for herself what was going on. And she said in court, you know, I am not able to personally micromanage FCI Dublin. I have a full docket of cases. I don't have time to stop by once a month and see for myself what's going on. So basically, the special master is someone who can assist the court in doing that.
Got it. Got it. Her, like attaché or something. When you mentioned that plaintiffs, and, you know, there's all this stuff that's in federal court, it's difficult to describe, right? But there's a whole fleet of lawsuits that have been going on, both like individual lawsuits as well as a class action, right?
Right. Yeah. So even just a week before last, there were two new lawsuits filed by women who had been incarcerated at FCI Dublin, alleging a wide range of, you know, sexual abuse, sexual harassment, things from voyeurism, rape, a lot of different really, you know, severe allegations. And that brought the total number of lawsuits to 63. Jeez. And that's aside from the class action lawsuit, which Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers just certified on with her order on Friday. So, yeah. And then obviously there's still criminal cases that are proceeding. My understanding is that the majority of the individual lawsuits have actually been stayed until July because the judge wanted to basically focus on, you know, the class action, the preliminary injunction, this question of whether there should be a special master before addressing those other lawsuits.
You were also at two hearings on Friday, right? I mean, was there any new information that came out aside from, you know, that's where the judge called the facility a dysfunctional mess? Or any other things that we should know from those hearings?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of speculation about what was going to happen at this hearing. It was scheduled very quickly after news of the FBI raid last Monday, so about a week ago now. And basically, I want to say 40 minutes before the hearing. There was no explanation as to why the hearing was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had been waiting for weeks, months for the judge's order on the special master question. So the order came down 40 minutes before the hearing. So by the time, you know, attorneys came to court, people didn't even have enough time to fully digest the 45 pages of what her decision was. Mm. So, you know, it was mostly a lot of housekeeping and logistics at that point, you know, but they did mainly discuss what this process is going to look like of picking a special master. And from what the judge said, what's going to happen is basically the attorneys on both sides have about a week to come up with a list of five people that they each want, you know, candidates that could be the special master with their bios and, you know, qualifications. At the end of that process next week, each side will be able to veto three of the other side's picks, and then the judge will pick from that narrowed down list.
Wow. So almost like sounds like a jury selection-esque process. You know, you mentioned the FBI raid and Mike Balsamo, the AP reporter editor did as well. It's actually the second time, right, that the FBI has raided this prison. What are they looking at? I mean, are they just like seizing evidence? Are they arresting? Like what's happening in those raids?
We do not know. You are right that in 2021, the FBI executed a search warrant of Ray Garcia's office, his residence, his vehicle. He's obviously, we all know, was subsequently arrested and indicted. He's now in prison himself. The FBI raid last week, you know, we don't know exactly what the purpose of it was or what the agents were looking for, what criminal activity they suspect is going on. But, you know, the FBI, you know, will say basically that they did conduct court authorized law enforcement activity. Mm-hmm. We do know that they were actually there because there was local news footage showing officers walking out of the building with boxes. You know, they took something, you know. Mm-hmm. I know the AP had reported that they had seized computers and documents, and also that, you know, these members of the executive team had been walked off the facility. BOP has said that, you know, they replace their executive team and that that's in line with these continued actions to really improve the culture at FCI Dublin. But it's really unclear. You know, we won't know until, you know, someone else is charged or there's another indictment.
Ashley Rolanda, I mean, what do you think about this news about appointing a special master? Like, do you think that place can change? Like, what do you think needs to happen?
Well, I think that that is a good start. Because what you're going to face and what you'll be faced against is that, you know, we don't know who we can trust. Mm. And when I call the police department, even the police department, the Pahrump Sheriff's Department failed me. Mm. I asked them to file a report so I didn't have to go through a third party or through PREA or through. I needed to be able to tell that story and tell what happened without having anything to do with the FBOP at all. And so I think it is a start. I think also, you know, when it comes to cameras in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, they have so many small spots in so many different areas where Dublin was written up many times to get cameras fixed. I think certain processes need to be, some things need to be delegated, of course, but I think other things, the prisons need to be definitely held accountable. And if they say bring in cameras and fill in cameras in all these areas, someone needs to follow up. There's never been a good follow-up in FBOP. Mm-hmm. And I think the master is just the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to work all alone as a standalone by no chance.
Well, I'm also hearing from you, too, that, you know, there's this broader network of people, you know, inside and outside the Bureau of Prisons. You know, it's not just Dublin. It's this much larger network who kind of enable the abuse that happens to people who are incarcerated there. We're talking about conditions at the scandal-plagued federal women's prison in Dublin. It was raided last week by the FBI. It's had a special master appointed by a judge in a case that's been brought against the institution. Earlier, we were joined by Mike Balsamo, who's U.S. law enforcement news editor with the Associated Press, has been investigating the facility deeply for several years now. We're also joined by Alex Hall, enterprise and accountability reporter here at the station with KQED. And we're also joined by Ashley Rolanda, who was incarcerated from June 2019 to September 2020, also at FCI Dublin. We'd love to hear from you. I mean, we've been mostly trying to bring you the news about this troubled institution. What questions do you have about the situation at the Federal Correctional Institution, Dublin? I mean, do you have experience at the Dublin Federal Correctional Institution, you know, as an inmate, an employee, family member? You can email that to forum@kqed.org, or you can give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about the Federal Women's Prison in Dublin, which has been plagued by sexual scandals for years now. Earlier, we were joined by Mike Balsamo, U.S. law enforcement news editor with the Associated Press. Now we're joined by Alex Hall, enterprise and accountability reporter with KQED, and Ashley Rolanda, who was incarcerated at the facility in 2019 and in 2020. We'd love to hear from you, your questions that you have about this situation out there, or if you have personal experience with this institution and what's happened with it. You can email us, of course, forum@kqed.org. You can call us 866-733-6786. I want to add another voice to our conversation. Amaris Montes is the director of West Coast Litigation and Advocacy for Rights Behind Bars, which is representing Dublin prisoners in the class action lawsuit that's driven some of this activity at the prison. Thanks for joining us, Amaris.
Thanks so much for having me.
Amaris, we were talking about the special master. How do you see the appointment of that special master?
Well, yeah, we're really encouraged that the court took notice that this special master is a necessary first step. And as Ashley mentioned, it's, you know, just the tip of the iceberg. It's just the first step to getting accountability and protection for people who are incarcerated at FCI Dublin. The special master will be able to be a completely separate entity, a third party neutral who people can report to regarding sexual assault and sexual harassment, regarding retaliation when people do report. We'll be able to speak to people directly and, you know, be able to review documents, review policies in order to provide recommendations for BOP officials and FCI Dublin officers to try to implement some changes going forward. And that's really what's necessary is systemic reform that can be implemented throughout the years, because, you know, the same thing and the same pattern has been happening since the 1990s, where individuals who are incarcerated at FCI Dublin have been subject to sexual assault. And FCI Dublin has attempted to just remove these officers, which is, of course, necessary, but doesn't fix the systemic rot that is happening in the facility. What is needed is to change the policies and ensure those policies are implemented, ensure that people feel safe reporting, ensure that people are not retaliated against. So it's a necessary first step, and we're really encouraged by it. You know, it's the first of its kind for the BOP, mm-hmm. but a lot more needs to happen in order to protect people inside. I
mean, when you say systemic rot, I kind of want to dig into, like, what that looks like, actually, right? Is it just that many of the people who work there, many of the staff came up in a culture that just accepts the sexualization and abuse of women inmates? Is it, like, or are there specific practices that are happening at Dublin that don't happen other places? Are there specific policies? Like, when we talk about systemic rot, what do you mean?
Right. So it's, you know, it's not only these individual officers who have committed sexual assault, but it's, as you say, this culture of protecting other officers who are committing sexual assault through a intricate system of protection. So these officers, you know, some of our clients were sexually assaulted and then other officers acted as lookouts for them. Or when they reported those reports of sexual assaults, what certain positions would called the special investigative specialist, who was supposed to report to the Office of Inspector General or Office of Internal Affairs, ends up burying some of these reports because they are also officers who are friends with the line level mm-hmm. officers, and, you know, feel like they need to protect officers from these from being, you know, removed or being fired. Then other officers help to silence individuals by putting them in solitary confinement, by threatening even non-citizen survivors of deportation mm-hmm. or removing what's called good time credits, which allows you to be released early, halting compassionate release petitions, things like that. So at every level, there's kind of an agreement to protect one another. And even at the top, BOP officials, incarcerated people are able to report directly to the OIG and OIA through emails. And even
Office of the Inspector General and...
an Office of Internal Affairs.
Yeah.
Those reports are also, you know, not followed up with. They are, perhaps people are interviewed, but there's no further actions taken to further protect that individual, either, you know, even providing adequate mental health care after survivors have been abused, or medical care. And so at every level, there's really just a failure for incarcerated people to be kept safe. And that allows this culture to continue.
I want to bring in a caller, Sarah, in San Francisco. Thanks for joining us, Sarah. What's your story?
It was more than 10 years ago. I was in Dublin for 3 months as part of School America Watch, so kind of a political prisoner situation. Boy, the story was just that it was especially medical, and when you're in there, especially short time, under 6 months, they almost don't treat people medically because they're just like, oh, you'll be out soon. It was really atrocious to see the lack of medical care and the incompetent medical care. But you said that you just mentioned something about the culture of protection. Yeah, it was, you could see the new guards come in, and you could tell one of them wouldn't last a week because they weren't corrupted. You know what I mean? They were watching them, and their eyes were surprised watching it, what the guards would do. And I don't know, I didn't expect to be talking today, but boy, it's just, the whole attitude is as if the guards, they're a family, and they'll never turn on each other. That's great, whatever, they need that. But they also got bored, and they would set things up where dangerous situations would happen, and they would just be bored, so they would like put in people that had just previously been fighting or something and like bet on who would win, you know?
Oh. I mean, Sarah, what did you experience? You know, 3 months, you are trying to process and deal with what happened in there, both inside. What happens when you get outside after an experience like that?
Well, it's just the institutionalism is really hard on your spirit and your psyche, and just it's hard to make decisions and stuff when you get out because all your autonomy is taken away when you're in. You get, you know, you just do what they say, really, for the most part. So, and there is no choices when you're in. I mean, when I was, you know, when you're short time, you get sent to the kitchen usually. And they're like, okay, well, what size boot are you, you know? And I'm like, well, whatever, 9. And so they point to a wet pallet of dirty boots that are already used in the corner and say, pick them out. And the women prisons actually get the leftovers of the men's prisons. It was so bad.
Man. Sarah, I really appreciate you sharing what sounds like and must have been really difficult experience. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Amaryse, I'm sure you have heard many difficult things about this time. I mean, does Sarah's experience really track with kind of the things that you've heard from other people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can. Go ahead.
Yeah. So a lot of what, you know, she was mentioning with sort of this culture of, you know, people protecting one another and just horrific kind of conditions in the prison. I think all of that aids to kind of perpetuating sexual assault. When, you know, people are placed in solitary confinement, for example, after they report, the conditions of the solitary confinement is just horrific. You know, there's mold everywhere. They're cut off from communication from their loved ones. People aren't able to report sexual assault that is happening even in while they're in solitary. You know, that just kind of perpetuates this fear, and why it's so rampant at FCI Dublin is because tactics in the use of retaliation and kind of taking advantage of the terrible conditions in the facility to threaten people from reporting officer misconduct just continues this culture of people being afraid. I mean, if you can imagine, and people who've been inside can speak to this feeling, but being inside and being sexually assaulted by someone who has complete control over everything that in your life at that time, they have control to provision of medical care. They have control of, you know, disciplinary records, so they can threaten you with disciplinary sanctions. They can threaten to transfer you. They can, you know, it's just every aspect of your life is controlled by the officers who are there abusing you, who have incarcerated you. And so it's just a really scary position to be in, to live through, and to try to speak out through that. And so that's why we're really lucky and proud of these people who have been coming forward with their stories of sexual assault, and our 8 named plaintiffs in the class action lawsuit, as well as our other 12 named plaintiffs in our damages cases, and everyone else who is organizing inside with the California Coalition for Women Prisoners, who is one of our named plaintiffs in our lawsuit. There's just an amazing community of people who are trying to come together in order to make change for people who are continue to be incarcerated there and have some sort of accountability for survivors who have experienced such horrific abuse by officers inside.
Thank you, Amaryse. Let me bring in another caller. Let's go to Joan in Fremont. Welcome, Joan.
Oh, thank you. I'm a visitor with an organization called Prisoner Visitation and Support. We are sanctioned by the Bureau of Prisons to go into any federal or military prison. And our purpose is to visit prisoners who have no one else to visit. One of the current women that I'm visiting, she's been there 8 years, and I've been seeing her for about a year, and I'm her one and only visitor. Mm. And she met with the judge. And she told her main issues were that the new officers' lack of training. They don't know what to do sometimes, especially like in the visiting room. They don't know the processes, and they don't treat the prisoners with any type of respect at all. They write them up for the smallest things, and then they get a shot, and then you get enough shots, you go to the SHU. That was one of her big issues. The other one is lack of medical care. If you have, you're in a lot of pain, they say, go take an aspirin. And then, of course, they have to buy their own aspirin at the commissary. And the women that are just getting there, they had paid $5 a month for their books on the commissary. So a lot of them have no even access to aspirin. She herself suffered a severe neck injury and was just ignored until she couldn't walk, and they had to send her to the hospital to have surgery, spinal surgery on her neck. They told her she needs another procedure, and that was like a year ago. In the meantime, she's got these sharp pins that go up and down the nervous system, the lack of medical care is just awful. They don't have a full-time doctor there, and they don't take your complaints seriously. Since the conviction of some of the officers, she said that the retaliation is just unbelievable.
Oh, man, Joan. Hey, thank you for doing that work. Really appreciate it. We have a call actually coming from, I believe, inside Dublin at the moment. Welcome, Jenna.
Hi. It's Monet. Hi, how's it going?
Oh, hey, Monet, how are you?
I'm wonderful.
Monet, you're currently incarcerated at Dublin right now.
Yes, sir.
What do you want us to know?
I just want you guys to know that I've been here for the last 5 years, and a lot of times that we do speak up, it's like we're unheard, or we're laughed out, or we're treated like we're minute because we have a prison number.
And Monet, how do you feel about the news that reform may be coming to the prison in the form of this special master or someone to take over?
It's actually a godsend to us.
Yeah. Monet, what have you seen inside that you would like to see change specifically?
First and foremost, the training, not only with the officers, but also with the medical staff here. We feel like we are definitely talked down to and treated some type of way because we're incarcerated and the things that have happened to us. They bring people here that come from other prisons or outside facilities, and they treat us bad because of the stigma that has been brought on, not by us, but by the officers that are here.
Monet, anything, I know, I imagine time is probably pretty tight for you. Anything else that you want to add before we let you go?
I really just want you guys to pray for us here in Dublin, because the things that we've been through, the people that have been here for a very long time, we need help here. And it's like no one really sees us. And the judge that came through, she actually was very compassionate, and she heard everything that we were saying and more. She's seen the retaliation. She's seen the lies and the cover-ups, and we appreciate her, and we actually appreciate you guys, too, for listening and seeing that we are in distress and that we do need help.
Monet, do you feel almost like it's a little dangerous to have hope? Because, like, the place has been the way it's been for so long. Are you, like, worried that nothing will actually change in the end?
I'm actually shaking right now talking to you guys. I'm really nervous. I might go to the shoe after this, but I don't care. I don't care.
Monet, thank you for calling. I really appreciate it. I hope that doesn't happen to you. Thank you for just letting us know what you're going through on the inside, and appreciate that. Alex Hall, these stories are so hard to hear, and people have such a, they're trying so hard to get their stories out. It makes me emotional just thinking about it. What do you think is going to happen?
What do I think is going to happen? I don't know, but I mean, I just think it's amazing that caller came through. I mean, wow. I'm really glad that happened. That was really enlightening. You know, especially what she said about the judge. I mean, I think I don't know if I mentioned this already, but, you know, the judge has been really hands-on in trying to figure out for herself what is really going on at FCI Dublin right now. Because obviously, neither the government nor the plaintiffs disagree that there was this culture of abuse and retaliation under Ray Garcia. Mm-hmm. And the government has said, BOP has said, you know, we have these new leaders, we're cleaning up the situation, everything's either fixed or on its way to getting better. The judge has said, you know, obviously both sides have kind of painted this picture as if it's black or white, that it's, you know, all or nothing, and that she has said in court, and she said in her hearing issued Friday, that she thinks it's really nuanced. You know, that the truth is somewhere in the middle, were the words that she used. Yeah. And it seems like, you know, she visited the prison herself, like the caller said. She talked to over 100 inmates. Yeah. And she's taking it really seriously.
Well, I just really, really appreciate your bravery, Monet, and also you, Ashley Rolanda, you know, incarcerated June 2019 to September 2020 at FCI Dublin. Thank you so much for joining us, Ashley.
Yes, of course, and thank you all for having me.
Wanted to thank Amaris Montes, Director of West Coast Litigation and Advocacy of Rights Behind Bars as well. Thank you, Amaris.
Thank you so much.
Earlier, we were joined by Mike Balsamo, U.S. Law Enforcement News Editor with the Associated Press. And Alex Hall, thank you to you as well, Enterprise and Accountability Reporter with KQED.
Thank you.
Appreciate everyone who called into the show. Thank you so much. Glad this story is getting out there. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more right after the break.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.